Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360-degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's Klaviyo.com. You're listening to the Wavebreak podcast, the show where I interview the people behind the fastest growing e-commerce and direct-to-consumer brands. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder and CEO at Wavebreak. Wavebreak is the email and CRM agency for high-growth D2C brands. With ad costs rising, we help brands maximize lifetime value by building and optimizing world-class email and SMS marketing programs. You can learn more about partnering with us at wavebreak.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder and CEO of Wavebreak. At Wavebreak, we help brands maximize revenue through best-in-class email and SMS marketing. Specifically, what we do is we come in, we find gaps that you don't even know exist in your existing customer journey. We build a best-in-class email and SMS program around it and continue to optimize. Our typical client sees a 30% to 300% increase in email revenue within 90 days. I was just looking at the results of another client recently. We extract in an extra 40K a month just within the first 60 days. Much more to come on that. And that's really a worst case scenario result that we typically see. A lot of times we're unlocking an extra million per year in revenue within those first 90 days, depending on where your brand's at and your current setup. We've seen it all over the last 5 years, optimizing email and SMS programs for a vast number of direct-to-consumer brands across all different verticals and industries within that. And if you want to learn more about working with us, you can learn more at wavebreak.com. Really excited for today's episode of the Wavebreak podcast. This is the marketing podcast for high-growth direct-to-consumer brands, where you're going to learn what's working in e-commerce marketing with interviews from the fastest-growing direct-to-consumer brands. This episode is no different. I'm joined by Alex Weinstein, who is Chief Digital Officer over at Hungry Root. They're an online grocer, which he'll tell you more about in a second. Prior to that, he ran marketing at Grubhub, where he was managing a $300 million budget, investing in TikTok and seeing a lot of success with that early on on the platform, as well as diversifying their marketing mix away from Facebook into TV. We chat about how you can do the same, what minimum budget you need for TV, what length ads to run, how to run a successful test. We talk about incrementality and how that's important for marketing and how to test and optimize your marketing mix to support long-term growth. Understanding your real cost to acquire customer and lifetime value of a customer. We break all that down. And we also talk at the end about differentiation and how you can stand out in a competitive and crowded marketplace. This is an episode that you're not going to want to miss. Stay tuned. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Alex.
Dylan, thank you for having me.
Yeah, really excited. So we were just talking about this before. Hungry Root is in a really interesting space. Grocery. Everybody has to buy groceries, but not everybody has heard of Hungry Root yet. Tell us, what's Hungry Root, and what are you guys working on?
Yeah, Hungerroot is your personalized grocer. That is exactly as you said. Everybody has to buy groceries, and it's just such an ordeal. You have to make a list, and then you go to a grocery store, and you forget one item, and then you can't cook what you actually wanted. Most folks, whether they use online or offline grocers, they have to browse the aisles, and they spend hours doing this. And we were quite inspired by an opportunity to make this better. So we are a tech-enabled grocery service that's 100% inspired by you. You take a quiz and get healthy groceries and simple recipes picked for you each week, and they get delivered to your door. And the more you shop with us, the more we understand you. We understand what you like and don't like, and we improve our recommendations so that you enjoy whatever is in your box better and better each week. So our customers spend less time planning and shopping and more time actually enjoying their food while being dramatically more sustainable and just having drastically less food waste.
Yeah. And where's this available? Like, is this available in all the US, or where can people order Hungerroot?
All throughout the US.
And how's that work? Like, so I order, you know, I'm like, oh, I order, I, you know, I fill out the quiz. You're going to ship me cherry tomatoes or something. Like, we're focused on the marketing and the growth side and talk about digital, but like logistically, you know, how does that work?
Yeah, we have fulfillment centers throughout the country where we package tens of thousands of boxes, and each of those boxes is effectively different, right? Because everybody's tastes are different. We pack them carefully so that they make it throughout the journey and your tomatoes aren't hurt and cold items remain cold. We pay special attention to make sure that our packaging is recyclable and as environmentally friendly as we can make it. And then we ship it to you using your local carrier. It appears in your doorstep. You get an SMS message whenever it arrives so that you can pick it up right then.
Wow, that's awesome. And so how are people finding out about this? And are there like any particular places where it's taken, like was this, or I guess, what was the initial strategy? I know like you weren't there for the very early days, but like, I mean, this is a huge market with like a lot of potential for upside. Grocery's huge, but it's also super competitive. So like what did that look like? And then what do things look like now? I guess if you can get us up to speed.
Yeah, the company has gone through an amazing journey, and you're exactly right. I only joined 4 months ago, but the journey has impressed me so much. So the company actually started as a consumer packaged goods company, creating recipes of their own and groceries of their own and eventually selling them to consumers. And what they've realized throughout that journey is that if you don't have enough variety, if you don't have enough SKUs that you're carrying, you simply cannot have enough retention. So as time progressed, they became more of a true grocery destination. And now Hungerroot carries hundreds of items, hundreds of grocery items that add up to thousands of recipes. Many of those items are actually Hungerroot branded, but many are not, right? And as a result of this, we're able to fulfill a lot of consumers' preferences. And a lot of our consumers are vegan. A lot of them are pescatarian. And as time progresses, these niches stop becoming niches. And by understanding their preferences better and supplanting these needs with inventory from other manufacturers, we're actually able to do a very good job satisfying their diets and helping them discover new things that maybe they wouldn't even discover at their local grocery store.
Yeah, that's great. And so like, what's the game plan now for growing this to the next level? Because you're currently doing about like what, or I guess like what are current numbers? What's current status of scale? Like, what does that look like? And then we can talk more about like where things are headed.
Yeah. So we're at about $200 million in revenue now. We are growing by mid to high double digits every year, which is really exciting. We are also quite profitable. We've been profitable since the beginning of 2020. This company has a massive structural advantage that actually comes from the history of where we started. Because we had many Hungerroot products and an understanding of how to develop our own private label products, we actually have a fairly good margin. So whenever we send you a $100 box, we're playing in the 40% gross margin territory, a drastically more profitable business than some of our competitors, right? In my previous role, when I was the Senior Vice President of Growth for Grubhub, with grocery delivery and food delivery, if you're playing in the logistics space, your margins are so very much squeezed and there's very little you can do to improve them. If on the other hand, you actually own the inventory and are able to play in the private label space, you can afford to do really cool things for your customers and your business structurally is drastically more profitable, which is why as early as early 2020, the company has been able to achieve profitability. As you'd anticipate, going forward, our plans are to keep exploding this thing, right? To offer it to more consumers, to increase the number of SKUs that we carry, to understand each customer even better than we do now. We today do a fairly good job, which allows us to have better retention than almost anyone in our industry by dollars spent in the first 3, 4, 5 months. We can take this further. And if we do a good job at it, every time in an interaction, bringing in more and more data, we can have even more scale and even better retention. I feel like we're just getting started on it.
Does that all come back to the quiz? Is that why it's so powerful? You have to go through the quiz to order? Or what? Where is all that data coming from?
Yeah, the quiz is a really powerful source. And just for your listeners, to give you a little bit of an intuition, think of that quiz is similar to Stitch Fix's quiz. We ask you questions about how many people are in your household. Do you have any dietary restrictions? What do you usually like for breakfast? Do you like spicy foods? Do you prefer this protein or that protein? And these initial questions we've discovered are very powerful in our ability to understand and pre-fill the consumer's cart. What we do afterwards is exactly as it sounds. We ask you all of these quiz questions, then we show you what we filled your cart with. And that is groceries that add up to recipes. And then each customer is free to customize as they see where, as they see fit. That is, maybe remove some items from the box because we didn't get something right. Maybe add something else. And anytime they take an action like this, we observe so that our next recommendation can become better. We also, after every delivery, ask for additional feedback to say, hey, what did you think about this taste? This is what is powering the experience today. And it's working fairly well. I would say that we're just getting started, though, because there's so many more data points that we can ask consumers because they trust us, because they've been entitled, they've entrusted us with this position of a curator, of a personal chef. And you expect your personal chef at home to look at you and say, hey, I'm thinking about making a salad for you tomorrow. How do you feel about a shrimp salad that's maybe coming in with a spicy sauce? And then you can say, I actually don't feel like spicy tomorrow. Actually, just get me a regular salad, maybe instead of shrimp, I prefer salmon this time. This kind of a back and forth interaction is only possible if you set the consumer's expectation that you are their curator. And we are really lucky because consumers today trust us with exactly that. And that is a unique point of differentiation versus some of the giants that you see in the industry, the Instacarts, the Whole Foods of the world.
Yeah. And let's talk about that because you sort of come from one of those giants previously, and then you're thrown into this high growth startup that has some initial traction and all these initial data points. Like when you got to Hungry Root and you're thinking about growing it, like there's so many different levers you can pull. It's like, oh, do we get more data on our customers? Do we pull that retention lever? Do we pull the acquisition lever? Do we just, you know, dump more money into channels that are already working? Like what did that, I know you're super data driven. So like, what did that process look like as you joined the company and started to figure out what to do first?
Yeah, maybe the most important thing to me for a company in any stage is understanding its unit economics. That is true LTV and true CAC. And when I say true, I mean incremental LTV and incremental CAC. And very few marketers understand the incremental CAC. Very few marketers understand incremental LTV. So one of the first things I pursued with the team is establishment of really good metrics that allow us to say, okay, if we were to throw in another $100 into this channel, how many customers are we really going to get? And the customers that we're getting from channel X versus channel Y, are they actually better? Because it's so easy to look at conversion and say 40% off produces better conversion, lower CAC. Excellent. Let's do 40% off instead of 20% off. And yet, if you don't pay attention to the LTV and the incrementality, you might end up upside down. And so very often, especially in the current frothy capital markets, it's so easy to throw money at the problem in a pursuit of growth at all costs. I very much don't believe in that. That is, if you focus on true LTV over CAC and true incrementality, you're able to push until the limit and make it so that your marginal revenue equals marginal cost. You know, econ 101, direct application of it right there. If you don't measure those numbers, you can't. And so very often you will set money on fire. And whether your budget is 10 million a year or 300 million a year, well, you can't afford to do that in any of those cases.
Right. No, and that's great. And so when you think about like actually mapping that out, what are some, like, how do you make sure that you don't, you know, mistakenly forecast the wrong way in something that is just going to be a short-term bump versus something incremental that's going to last for a while? Like, how do you think about that?
Yeah. Let me focus the first part of our conversation on the marketing measurement part of this and the second part on the product portion of this, because both are equally important. I don't want to get too set on the marketing optimization because I don't believe that that's enough. Okay, so on the marketing side of this, first, true incrementality testing. Here's what I mean by it. Your Facebooks and Googles of the world are very good at showing you numbers that make you look good to your boss. That is, if you want to show something that goes up and to the right, they will show you that chart and you can then proudly invest additional dollars in there. You're in an even scarier position if you're not the one directly buying from Facebook or Google, but you have an agency doing this. That agency takes a cut from your Facebook spend. So now you have not just one sophisticated party trying to convince you that your Facebook spend is amazing. You have two sophisticated parties. So incentives are massively misaligned. And unless you yourself are carefully designing incrementality tests, don't trust anything that platforms show you. You will not be able to hand in the heart truly know what the impact of your channels is. It's particularly important if you're looking at perfectly measurable channels, quote unquote perfectly, versus these old school channels that actually don't have good measurement tactics, such as TV versus Facebook. You can measure theoretically everything on Facebook and nothing on TV. Does that mean that TV is so horrid? Well, I'll tell you some stories from Grubhub when we reallocated from digital video to television and became one of top 100 US spenders on television. Our growth has exploded. Grubhub is a public company and all of those numbers are public as well. But making this seemingly contrarian move to not pay the measurement tax has allowed us to drastically accelerate our growth. So that's the kind of incrementality piece. The LTV side of this, in my mind, is really complicated and requires good analysts. And the reason why you need this is so that you can develop LTV proxies. Here's what I mean by this. If your business is any kind of LTV business, that is, whether it's a subscription service or there's a lot of recurring purchases, your break-even period is probably not going to be just your first purchase. If it is, you're not spending enough money. If your break-even period is like any business within the benchmarks, it's going to be, say, what, 6 months, 12 months, something like this. So you're going to need to make decisions based upon something that's going to happen 6 or 12 months from now. Or you can only make decisions every 6 months. You can run one experiment every 6 months. Well, I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound frequent enough for me. You need to develop some way to predict what's going to happen 6 months down the line based upon some of the stats that you see now. So you need to develop LTV proxies. For that, you need analysts that are able to develop a mechanism to say, okay, let me look at the cohort of customers that came in from Google search, who afterwards saw a 40% off discount, and let me predict what their lifetime value is going to be after only a month of their behavior, not 6 months. If you're really good, and if your business allows, try to predict even earlier. Be really careful with correlation coefficients. They need to be strong enough. So if you develop that, you have both the rigor of looking at LTVs and the ability to make decisions fairly quickly. So that's the second part in marketing. That's kind of the two parts, right? Incrementality and acquisition and LTV proxies on the LTV side. On the product side, this has a lot more, a lot more to do with applying best practices. Let me give you some examples. And some of the things are going to be intuitive to product leaders. Just from their experience when they dive in and look at the flows, right? If you resist the temptation that your business is unique and instead put on the hat of Well, I'm a consumer who's dealing with dozens of apps every day, and some apps create an imprint in my head that creates expectations that I will then apply to all the other apps. If you take this humble point of view that, okay, Hungerroot is selling groceries and it's a subscription, and it's a little bit different than your typical e-commerce, but an average consumer is thinking about us really closely comparing to every other e-commerce app that's out there. So whenever they see a product, they expect it to be shoppable. They expect to be able to add it to cart. Whenever they see a recipe, they expect to be able to add it to cart. Auditing your flows with the mindset of what does a consumer that's trained on an Amazon expect from your e-commerce-like application, and removing this assumption of uniqueness from your mind will allow you to discover massively low-hanging fruit. In some way, this point of view is also quite humble, right? Your product is not this unique snowflake that must set brand new expectations and set new UI guidelines. No, it is not. You are a tiny speck in the consumer's life, and your goal is to fit them, not for them to learn you. So that's kind of piece one, right? And piece two has to do with numbers. Make sure that you have good instrumentation of your product flows and you understand exactly where consumers are falling off so that you can start asking yourself why. How exactly do you optimize things if you don't know where customers are falling off or which features they're using and which ones they're successful with or not? Your intuition might tell you, and my intuition very recently also told me, really wrong things about the customer experience. Let me give you one really interesting insight that I saw in our own data that surprised me quite a bit. A lot of our customers customize their boxes. As you heard me say, Hungerroot pre-fills their grocery box each week. And then afterwards, consumers can kind of edit them a little bit. Some edited more, some edited less. But within that customization experience, we have a heavy browse focus. You can browse by categories of dishes, right? And that's what I expected a lot of consumers to use. It's very prominent. And then there's a little search box. I'm like, our search, there's not that many things to search for. You can kind of get to them through browse. All the popular things are showing up there. How many customers can really be using search? They're like, it's not really amazing functionality today. I don't really care about investing it too much. And then I decided to kind of challenge that assumption. And I went into our product analytics tools. And I discovered that 39% of the customers within their session actually used search. I'm like, wow, this is mind-blowing. I would have not guessed this at all based upon how not prominent search is. Well, guess what? When we're looking at the roadmaps for next quarter, making search just a little bit better, right? Going from, let's say, I don't know, a C minus to a B, right, became an important item on our roadmaps.
And now a quick break for a quick word from our sponsor, Okendo. Okendo is the new standard in customer reviews for high-growth Shopify brands. We use them with our clients, and they work with over 4,000 of the fastest-growing Shopify retailers like Skims, Nomad, and Buck Mason to help them leverage their most powerful asset, their customers. Okendo gives brands all the tools they need to capture and showcase customer-generated content like product reviews and ratings, photos and videos, and Q&A. Plus, they have an awesome integration with Klaviyo that makes it easy to do cool stuff like send review request emails and target shoppers based on review content. And now that it's that time of year again, when Black Friday and Cyber Monday are top of mind, Okendo is offering a 90-day free trial to help e-commerce brands ramp holiday conversion without having to worry about increased subscription costs. If you sign up before October 31st, you pay nothing until 2022. It's really a no-brainer to me, and don't worry, you won't be forced into any expensive annual contracts after your trial is up. They offer super affordable monthly subscriptions starting at $29. So you can make the most out of this holiday season with a little help from Okendo. Visit okendo.io and start your free trial today. That's okendo.io. Thanks, Okendo, for sponsoring the show. Yeah, that's great. I love that. I think so many people, you know, you talk about like digital and like how you can measure everything, but it doesn't necessarily produce the best result. It's the same thing with like, I mean, there's so many things that you said that I completely agree with. Like, I think marketers try to impress other marketers more than like understanding their customer and really providing a good journey. It's like, hey, this ad, or like even agencies, it's like, hey, this ad looks really good compared to everyone else's. It's like, yeah, but does the customer even care? Or like you were saying, like there's so much low hanging fruit in just the way like, you know, your team thinks about it compared to how the customers actually use and operate your product, or, you know, operate your products or whatever that looks like. I want to talk too about like, okay, so like transitioning, are you thinking about marketing at HungryRoot the same way you did at Grubhub? Like, are you thinking like, okay, let's like diversify away from digital and try some other older, more stable channels like TV, things like that? Or like, how do you think about it on the acquisition side? Because I'm imagining HungryRoot when you come, it's like the typical playbook, like, you know, we're spending a lot on Facebook or something like that, maybe doing some affiliate influencer. What did that look like? And how do you think about like marketing from a channel perspective today?
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. We, like many startups in our stage, and maybe a little bit earlier, rely on Facebook a ton. And one of the things I indeed have been pursuing is trying to find means of relying on Facebook less. I bet your listeners, just like us, over the course of the last couple of months have seen deterioration of Facebook's effectiveness as a result of iOS 14. Apple indeed has hurt Facebook's business significantly. So as a result of this, companies that are over-reliant on Facebook are kind of beholden to one channel's efficiency. Yes, we're, of course, exploring other channels. I really like this approach of zigging when everybody else zags, right? Why is Facebook and Google so very popular? Because it's perfectly measurable. And us as marketers, we get the CFOs coming and staring us down and saying, what exactly is the return on your marketing spend? So that's what you get if you overemphasize measurement. Perfectly measurable, and yet maybe not most efficient tools. If you look in places that are less perfectly measurable, and if you can stomach that ambiguity that comes from it, and if you can stomach the complexity that comes with needing to measure these through completely different means, you can find really good efficiency on boring, stodgy things that nobody uses, like linear television, because everybody comes here.
No, that's great. And then, like, what is that like? Because I know so many people who listen to this podcast are like, TV, but they're thinking like, yeah, I know, like TV, like the way digital is getting, like everybody's looking for that next thing. I know a lot of people are even going into direct mail, but like for somebody who actually has experience going into TV and transitioning off digital, like what was that like?
Sure. What's it like? Well, you need to have a certain level of spend to tip your toes in the water. If you're not willing to spend $1 million in experimentation, don't do television. Just like, period.
And what period is that? Is that over like 90 days or like a month? Or like, what is like an experimentation period for that?
I mean, 90 days is a good period to start thinking about playing with TV. If you're going from zero to something on TV, 90 days is a good period. That's kind of one advice I'd give you. Have a minimum budget and don't expect that you're going to get it right out the window. Try multiple angles. That's one. Two, there are many ways to buy television. If you go to upfronts, you're going to pay drastically more money. And upfronts are basically this way to buy TV that your really big brands use. You pre-commit to a bunch of inventory. And as a result of this, you can be confident that your ads are going to be running during the most premium spots like Saturday Night Live and such. It's very expensive, both in terms of how much those slots cost and in terms of how much you're paying comparing to other people who run on Saturday Night Live if they don't have a guarantee that their inventory will run. If you're just getting started in television, embrace the bottom of the barrel. Embrace the DRTV approach. That is, go with a quant agency that speaks very little about brand impressions and reach and things like brand recall, and instead has measurements around immediate number of visitors that come to your site in the following 10 minutes after each spot. This is how you start getting into TV. And as a result of this, if you start buying this way in the beginning, and if you kind of buy the bottom of the barrel like this, and that means not the most desirable time of day, right? Maybe not the most desirable channels that you personally watch, right? Like take the humility hat. You're not trying through your media buys convince your friends that your brand is cool, right? If you can kind of like hand on the heart to look at yourself and say, that's why I'm doing this buying and it has nothing to do with vanity, awesome. If it has even a shadow of vanity of like, oh my God, it'd be so cool to be on Saturday Night Live and I don't care if it's 200 grand for a 30-second spot, okay, screwed you are.
No, that's great.
That's point two. And point three, creative really matters. Creative on TV really matters. You need to be differentiated. You need to be super clear. If you can, play in the 15-second spot realm. They're, surprise, surprise, cheaper than 30-second spots. But in order to have an effective 15-second ad, you need to know what your business stands for, how you're differentiated, and you need to have a really crisp way of saying it. You know, 15 seconds can save you 15% or more. That level of crispness. And if your industry is not well understood, not well differentiated yet, invest into creative and returns from that are going to really exceed your expectations.
Got it. And then so when it comes to tracking results of that test, you're looking at specifically like website traffic, 10 minutes after, like you go back and you look at the data of like, hey, this is when our ad aired. And then you track it with, you know, whatever your data says within that. And that's how you're tracking that back.
No, actually, no. Drastically more complicated than this. Forgive me. I'm going to go into a technical rant.
Yeah, let's do it.
Goes like this. You ideally, through this test, are attempting to determine what is the incrementality of television? What is the true incremental CAC? If you observe the immediate impact only of customers that look at the site within the first 10 minutes, you're really not considering the awareness impact of television. That is, let's say, I'm going to give you a Hungry Root example, right? Let's say a Hungry Root ad airs. I'm in that moment at a friend's house and we are maybe, I don't know, watching a game or something like this. I am in no condition to be thinking about creating a healthy food plan for my life, all right, or buying groceries for my house at all. But at the same time, that ad imprinted in my mind, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. I guess that's a cool way of buying groceries. I'm sick of spending hours at the grocery store. I really want somebody to understand me and help me save time and money. Okay, a couple of days later, you're at home, your fridge is empty. You go online, you type grocery service, and maybe you're on Google and you see some search results. Then the Hungry Root ad pops up and says, Hungry Root, healthy grocery delivery. You're like, oh, Hungry Root, I've heard about that. Yeah, let me click on that. Okay, why did you just click on that Google ad? Because you've seen that TV spot. Will the immediate method of measurement capture it? Absolutely not. It will attribute that benefit, last click be damned, to Google SEM. So how do you capture that awareness benefit? By creating an A-B test. That is, try to make an A-B test where you really can't. And one way I've seen success in this concept of sister market tests. Take a look, Portland and Seattle, couple markets with similar populations, similar demographics, similar competitive situation. In the case of restaurant food delivery, similar weather. You got to kind of dig for the industry dynamics there too. And then bombard one of the markets with a stimulus that you're interested in. That is, buy local TV. Local TV is more expensive, but you need it for measurement purchases. For measurement purposes. Then, after a certain period of time, however long your test lasts, observe what happened in your control market versus your treatment market. All in. That is, total new customers and total orders. And your last click attribution is going to say that all of the benefit is coming from SEM and it's all Facebook doing great. No, it's not. And no, your SEO didn't suddenly get better in Seattle overnight. That's why you look at the whole thing. You, of course, know how much you spent in total on that campaign. You know how many new customers and additional orders you got. You're able to, from that, calculate the incremental CAC. Now, if you're like us and your service is indeed nationwide, you then stop buying local TV because it's extremely expensive. You extrapolate the results to national TV prices.
Got it. And then with TV, is that something like, because I know like you can't dump too much budget into too many channels and not see results, but like with TV, how does it work exactly? I'm not super familiar. Like, can you just go and then would you scale it like 0 to 100 or you're still like dipping your toes into the testing phase and like slowly scaling out that budget over time?
In general, with any channel, if you suddenly insanely explode the spend, bad things happen. With TV, the way this materializes is you get drastically more frequency and not much reach at all. And the way this looks is, okay, there's a bunch of unsold inventory on CNBC. So your agency that's buying TV for you is going to be like, okay, I guess we just got to bid a little bit more on CNBC. Great. So an average customer is going to see your ad every 30 minutes. They're going to be sick of it. But people who haven't seen your ad won't see it still. That's the reach frequency balance that you need to really carefully walk. And if you dump a lot of money in, you're going to suddenly explode frequency without getting much reach. I don't advise it.
Got it. So that's why sometimes like you're watching TV and you see the same commercial again and again.
Yep.
Is that lazy agency, lazy brand, or both? Or is that a strategy for some people?
There's many reasons why this might happen, right? In some situations, you may want to do a spike because maybe you have a seasonally highly relevant promotion, right? Like you're selling skis, you're selling them in the winter. And in the winter, you really want to double down because, you know, right before the winter vacations for kids, that's when everybody's planning their skiing trip and you better sell your skis then. So you're really heavying up in that situation. So in some cases, it's not incompetence of any party. It's indeed a strategy. In other cases, yeah, sometimes it happens that there's a make good coming in from the network and they're kind of trying to provide a few extra impressions and those impressions are not particularly valuable. Yeah. Sometimes that happens too.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. No, this has been great. And then what about like other digital channels? Like, have you dipped your toes in those at all? Like, TikTok or anything else emerging?
Yeah, we're starting to play with TikTok. In the context of Grubhub, we've played with TikTok quite a bit and I was thoroughly surprised how effective it was back then.
Oh, nice.
What we've seen there actually was extremely counterintuitive to me as well. I was convinced that, you know, TikTok audience is much younger. They have much less disposable income, right? And as such, this cannot possibly work. And lo and behold, I was very surprised. That was off. It indeed worked quite well. It wasn't nearly the size of Facebook, but I very much believe in the ability of the channel to work now. And as they're continuing to grow, some say faster than Facebook in the US by a lot. I believe that with time, they will become even more significant.
Yeah. Plus their algorithm is just like insane. Yeah, you do. Yeah. And when you think about the future and like the rest of this year and into 2022, company has grown super fast. You want to keep that growth going. Like anything else that we didn't cover that you're thinking about that you think would be fun to talk about?
Yeah. Differentiation is a really big deal. And I very much encourage your listeners to think about what is a really simple way to explain how your business is different to a consumer, maybe even in the context of a 15-second TV ad. Because if you can't do it with just a couple of sentences, it's not clear enough in your head. Right. So this idea of making a really crisp, differentiated pitch and then doubling down on it in terms of product is core to what we do, which is why I think so much about how can we actually deliver better value to our consumers in terms of better recommendations? Where are things that we can ask consumers where each question will be like gold and will provide even more insight to our personalization algorithms for their next box? That's one aspect that really, really matters. Another aspect that really matters to us is sustainability. A lot of our consumers, especially our younger consumers, really care that what they buy is having a good impact on the planet, or at least a neutral impact on the planet. And that's one of the things that we really pride ourselves in. I already talked about how our box is as sustainable as it gets, but this idea of food waste and how god-awful it is for the planet. 20% of items that consumers buy in U.S. grocery stores is thrown out. Awful, right? We invest a lot of energy into reducing it. We're structurally positioned to do so. And I'll give you three ways we are, and we're working in all three. One is in the warehouse, right? If some consumer is kind of indifferent between Brussels sprouts and broccoli florets. They're kind of swappable in many recipes, right? If we have more of one and less of the other, we are in a unique position to just give some consumers who don't really care about the difference between the two more of the thing that we have. And as such, throw out less. We think that that's super important. Our consumers tell us that it's super important to them too. So that's one. Two is we are in a really cool place to shape consumers' preferences. Many already know that a plant-based diet is drastically better for the planet, but some may also know that some meats are drastically better for the planet and some are much worse. Beef specifically, because of methane involved in just gastrointestinal tract of cows, they produce to the tune of 8 times more carbon impact on the planet comparing to pork and chicken. So if we're able to tilt some consumers a little bit to eat a tiny little bit less beef, maybe a little bit more chicken or pork, we are net having a, as a community of hunger root customers, a meaningfully better impact on the planet than the alternatives. And three, because our box comes with recipes, you're never stuck in a situation that you have these bell peppers in your fridge and nothing to make with them. So they kind of go bad and you throw them out. So our consumers tell us that they actually save money because they throw out less food. So these three things at the warehouse, kind of tilting consumer preferences a little bit and reducing food waste because of recipes are really important to us, and we're planning to lean into them in the upcoming year.
Yeah, that's great. So when it comes to the Hungry Root 15-second pitch, like that's typically what you lean into then?
We talk about sustainability a lot. This is not the headline message, because still the headline message for us is very much of a personalized grocer. Now, one of the reasons to believe that we're going to do a good job being a personalized grocer for you is that we share your values. And we know that for our consumers, sustainability and being good to the planet is a really big deal.
Got it. Yeah. And that makes total sense. Well, hey, Alex, it's been great having you on the show. I know we're starting to run out of time here. I think it's a perfect spot to end with the summary of like Hungry Root's pitch and differentiator. Like, you know, with all that we said, like, let's see it in action. Like, no pressure to put you on the spot. It doesn't have to be 15 seconds exactly, but yeah, hit us with it. Would love to hear it. Perfect all plug right. Too.
All right. Hungry Root is a tech-enabled grocery service that's 100% inspired by you. Take our quiz, get healthy groceries and simple recipes picked just for you each week, delivered to your door.
That's perfect. Where do we learn more about Hungry Root?
Go to hungryroot.com, take the quiz, and see what we got for you. I have a good feeling that we'll be able to match any dietary preferences that you might have and pre-fill your box with some really cool recipes and groceries.
Yeah, and then you'll get to see Alex's marketing strategy in real time too. So definitely got to go check it out. And then Alex, where can we go to learn more about you as well?
Thanks so much for asking. I have a blog where I write a lot about both these incrementality strategies, sister market tests, LTV proxies, product optimization, quite a bit. AlexWeinstein.net is where it's at.
Amazing. We'll link that up down in the show notes below, as well as Hungry Root. Really appreciate you taking the time to come and chop it up, talk about incrementality, TV, a lot of things that I think aren't talked enough in this like digital direct consumer world. So super fun to chop it up with you. And thanks so much for coming on the show.
Dylan, thank you for having me. This has been super fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. If you're not subscribed on iTunes or Spotify, go hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you're not on our email list, go sign up at wavebreak.co/join. You'll join other e-commerce leaders at brands like Skims, Cartier, and Walmart, and thousands more, learning exactly what's working in e-commerce right now. You won't want to miss it. Sign up at wavebreak.co/join. It's free. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you.